Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable! Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe in myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome to episode 222 of the Last Round Podcast. And today's special guest, we have John Nash, combat sports writer for Bloody Elbow and the host of Hey, Not The Face podcast. Thanks for joining me, John.
Thanks for having me on.
So before we dive into all of the fights, John, just give everyone a brief bio of who you are and how you got into combat sports journalism.
I'm an LA resident. I've been here for a couple decades now, originally from the Midwest, Minneapolis. My day job is I'm a television editor. I edit television shows in Hollywood. But I've always been interested in combat sports, mostly boxing. I started following MMA in the 2000s, and I'm probably a bigger boxing fan historically, because I didn't like UFC and MMA when it first appeared. Didn't like it at all. But I've always a big boxing fan since I was, since I was a kid. Actually, I remember specifically the point where I switched from pro wrestling to boxing was when there was the Hagler-Leonard fight in 87. It was right after WrestleMania 3 and the big hype of it. I liked WrestleMania 3, but that captured me. And from that moment on, I was a combat sports guy. But I worked on a movie in the early 2000s with some MMA guys, UFC fighters. And they convinced me to give it another try, and I liked it. And I started, I'm big into, like, as a hobby, like antitrust and finance and stuff is just a personal thing. And I found I love covering the combat sports, the financial aspect of combat sports. And the truth is I find MMA is easier to cover because big companies control MMA, all aspects. So it's, if you can delve into that company and the structure, you know, the finances. So I generally focus on UFC and MMA because it's easier to cover the business side of the sport, but I also do some boxing. I'm a fan. I'm a pretty big fan of both. So
what movie did you work on where the fights?
It might be the worst MMA movie ever made, called No Rules. If you've ever seen it, has the great line where we're going to have a no rules fight, first rule. And I'm like, that kind of defeats the purpose of the no rules fight. You start listing the rules. So it was, had Randy Couture, Frank Shamrock in it. I met those guys on it, and they were not like the people I imagine were into MMA at the time. Cause the movie itself is basically a cliche of every douchebag gimmick of MMA fans, you know, the Affliction t-shirts, big giant wheeled trucks, terrible metal, all those things. That was what the movie that they presented as, but the fighters were actually pretty cool.
So that old saying, you know, don't meet your heroes. I'm not saying they're your heroes, but you know, don't meet your heroes went down okay.
It went down okay. I mean, I didn't even know the guys before. Like I said, I was not into MMA at all before, because when I saw one of the early UFC events and I didn't care for it. I thought this is trash. And it took me a while to get over that, because you see some guy kick a fat guy and you're like, well, these guys can't fight, you know, especially at the time. You know, I'm like, I'm a Ray Mercer fan at the time. I'm like, that guy would have killed him. And then you watch those guys, you're like, this is trash. But then later you meet I got into martial arts and stuff, and you meet the guys and you're like, oh, this stuff actually works. And if you talk to the actual guys that take it serious, you can see where the sport is. But the way it's presented often is much more, it's presented as trash often.
And recently there was a big move for Bloody Elbow.
Yeah, Bloody Elbow went independent. They were released by Vox, which secretly I'm happy about. We're now on a Substack. Substack, we have our podcast and a Substack for the articles. So I'm happy about it, because the Vox was somewhat limited to the story, kind of limiting the stories we could cover. We had to go through some hurdles sometimes to get stories published. And we're a little more with Nate Wilcox now in charge again, the editor-in-chief. He's much more proactive. He likes a hard-hitting journalism, which, I mean, I don't want to, you know, say that, but there's stuff I can cover about the sport that both MMA and boxing that before, especially on the MMA side, because the promoters control so much of the ad revenue for the sites and have such leverage, that the Vox and stuff probably were a little hesitant for us to post stories about.
And you would say you're more of a kind of an investigative long form type of writer yourself?
Well, people say I'm investigating. I've done a few, but really my specialty is the financial aspects of the business. I guess I cover a lot of the legal. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but I cover the legal side, which is the mostly the antitrust lawsuit and attempts to expand the Ollie Act through Congress for the mixed martial arts. I'm not a financial expert anymore. I don't even have a degree. I was a truck driver years ago before I became an editor. So, but I cover, the financial side of the business. So, I'll take investigative journalist because, it just sounds cool.
No, exactly. Yeah. I would take it. I'd take it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's jump into the fight reviews. So this weekend, Saturday the 6th of May from the Estadio Akron in Jalisco on DAZN pay-per-view, Saul Canelo Alvarez moved to 59-2-2 with a unanimous decision over John Ryder, who dropped to 32-6. This is for the undisputed super middleweight titles of the world. So, John, what did you think of Canelo's performance?
Well, I didn't think of much. I'm a massive Canelo fan. I love the guy. And he smoked him. It was very one-sided. I think I gave Ryder one round, and it might have been a pity round too. I'm not 100% certain he really took a round, but I gave him credit. He tried harder, but of all the Brits that Canelo has beaten over the years, Ryder probably is the lowest caliber of them. I don't want to be mean to the guy. He's not a terrible fighter, but there's the Calum Smith and other guys were probably better, more talented fighters than him. I thought one thing is, I think Canelo, and this, I know there's a lot of fans arguing about his showing his age because he's not that old. The man has a ton of fights, started in 15. A lot of fights on his record aren't there. I do think, I'm not saying he's like not a good fighter anymore. I think he's still one of the best fighters in the world. The guy just for years was destroying people. But I do get the sense that we are seeing a Canelo that has a lot of mileage on him and is not the guy he was a couple of years ago. So he's still a top fighter, but in a weird way, he's kind of like Lomachenko. Where Lomachenko, it seems recently, it's like he was good. I mean, but Canelo obviously had a better professional career than Lomachenko, but Lomachenko looked just super sharp in fights. And now he's still good, but you're like, I don't get the same sense that he can just outmaneuver anybody in the ring. And I think there's, we saw Bibble and even when we saw the Golovkin, I didn't think Canelo's performance against Golovkin, considering how old Golovkin is, was that spectacular. I get the sense that if he meets David Benavidez or something, it could be not the end, but we could see that the passing of the torch coming soon. But I don't know. I could be wrong. What did you think of that fight?
I was surprised that John Ryder lasted the full 12, because you'd have thought with Canelo's normal style, someone like a Billy Joe Saunders that moves around and is more of a slick boxer, he would be someone that would give Canelo trouble and actually take Canelo rounds. Whereas John Ryder is kind of actually has like a similar style. And when you saw them in the ring, they were actually similar shapes, similar sizes, both very strong fighters.
Yeah.
John Ryder was kind of like there to be hit, but you could see at times, especially that little uppercut that he was doing on the inside was giving Canelo problems. And I thought he had a very good style. Every time that Canelo got in close, he would kind of just grab him, hug him, kind of disrupt Canelo kind of working on the inside, who's normally very good at that. So yeah, I was kind of surprised. I actually picked, I think it was John Ryder to lose in either round 6, 7, 8, something like that. I thought it would take a few rounds for Canelo to warm up and then he would probably stop him or the referee would jump in. So yeah, especially after getting dropped in the second round and Canelo breaking his nose, I was like, okay, I think I'm going to be wrong. I think it's going to be earlier than that. But, John Ryder managed to hang on. And I thought he actually did better in the later rounds than expected. Because it looks like either Canelo was taking a few rounds off because he was comfortable, or he was actually starting to fatigue a little bit, because there was rounds where, it seemed like his punch output just dropped significantly. So, I thought it was a good performance from John Ryder. But I don't know.
I thought it was. I don't want to. I do think it was a good performance, but we're talking about a guy that's Canelo, kind of one of the all-time greats. You know, he's he's also one of the very best fighters of this generation. And he's fighting a guy that lost to the opponents that Canelo waxed earlier. So, I mean, he lost, the Ryder, if I believe, he lost to Calum Smith. He lost to Rocky Fielding. I mean, he lost to, he's got, what, six losses, he said, well, five, I guess. This was his sixth loss. So I just thought, you know, that a Canelo of old would have finished him. And especially because the last four rounds were almost, you know, equal, I thought. I gave Canelo, edged him out, but they were fairly close rounds at the end of the fight, and that was kind of shocking, especially at home. I think you'd think he'd want to finish him for the home crowd.
Yeah, that's the thing, especially when he got to like the last couple of rounds. I was like, okay, are we going to see Canelo put his pedal to the floor? You know, is he going to go all out? Because I think it was his first ever fight, especially since he's been such a big name, you know, fighting in his home stadium in Jalisco. But Canelo did go up to him afterwards, and I think he said, you know, like, you are a strong fighter, and you are, I don't know whether he said it or people just made it up, you know, you were the best, you know, British fighter that he's fought so far.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I find that hard to, I don't know. I find that part hard to believe, but I will say there was a lot of entertainment, and I'm not big on like the introductions and stuff, the light shows. This is one of the few times like, wow, that was a pretty impressive walkout by Canelo, where the light show was like, Jesus, that it kind of, I'm like, okay, it adds a little, there's some value to my pay-per-view dollar going there that I agree with. But I thought that was sadly, that might be the best part of the night, but it was super impressive, the walkouts.
According to Eddie Hearn, Canelo took $10 million less to fight at home in Jalisco instead of fighting at, I believe it was, they also booked the SoFi Stadium in LA, the home of the LA Rams.
Yeah.
He took $10 million less to fight at home in front of, you know, his family.
I can believe that, because we know from the lawsuit with DAZN what his previous deal paid. And it was 30 to 35 million, no, 35 million guaranteed for the DAZN. And that's just the DAZN money. So when he was fighting on his own, and he would fight his regular deal was $35 million, and then he would get like $15 million for these additional bonus fights against lesser talent if he wanted it. So this was probably similar to that. Of course, the other interesting thing from those lawsuits is we know that originally in his contract he was to get $60 million to fight Gennady Golovkin, not counting the gate revenue, just for the TV rights. The gate is separate. So he probably, I don't know, he probably had a similar deal. I imagine he didn't come back to fight Golovkin for a lot less than that was originally offered. So,
what do you think of the fight, Danny Z?
What's that? Well,
I wanted to ask, and I apologize. I know I just jumped in, guys.
I just snuck in. I'm like, I didn't even see you come in
here.
Look at that.
I'm in. What I wanted to ask, and I apologize if you guys have already touched on it, but there was obviously the notion that Canelo has possibly lost a step. You know, there's that narrative going around right now. John, I'm not sure if Mike's already posed that question to you, but if he hasn't, I'm posing it to you right now.
Talk a little bit that the guy has, he started fighting at 15 and has a ton of rounds, a ton of fights. And I still think he's a great fighter. And I said before, I think he's still up there as world-class, but I think he's not the Canelo of a couple of years. I think just you can't imagine after that many fights, that many rounds, that you're going to keep it. You're not immortal. Eventually it's going to start adding up. And I just get a sense that it's starting to add up, that he's good. He's really, really good, but maybe he's not the best fighter in the 160 to 174 pounds that he was a few years ago.
You touched on the entrance, you know, the extravaganza that is put on for these stadium fights. Do you think the Matchroom and Eddie Hearn are the best at doing that?
I got to give him credit. He does do that a lot. And which is funny is my understanding, I don't know how much Eddie Hearn is really the promoter of this event, because it's in Mexico. Canelo's got, I'm sure he has people there. They know the market for the tickets, I'm sure, better than Eddie Hearn does. So I'm sure on the ground, a lot of the guys have business relations with Canelo. But Eddie Hearn, obviously the spectacle part that they brought, and I don't really care about the spectacle stuff, but I gotta admit, this time and a few, you know, some of the big heavyweight boxing matches, this was a time where like this really felt special from him as homecoming. And I thought, okay, that was, you know, the fight is not the fight I want to see for Canelo. This is not one of the opponents on the list of people I want to see him fight. But if you're not going to be one of the people I want to see him fight, make it heartwarming. The coming home, this had a lot of it. So,
I mean, obviously we'd like to see there's Benavidez, Charlo, and you know the bigger names and stuff like that. Do you think it's likely? And I this might be an easy answer, but do you think it's likely that either of those names would have went to Mexico to fight him there?
No, I don't think they would have because the money was less in Mexico. I mean, DAZN paid less for him, but I think if you're going to do those guys, they want to be in America so they can get the media there for the pay-per-view and the gate. The gate's going to be a lot more. You know, you're just leaving a lot of money on the table for that kind of fight. So I think they wouldn't have gone unless there's some way they know for sure that it could do the same business in Mexico. But I just don't think you can. The American dollar is just pay-per-view money is so high.
John, since you work in the movie business, you know, for your full-time job, for your real job, could you have planned Canelo some, you know, astronomical coming through the ceiling on a helicopter type of entrance?
No, I think that was perfect because one thing I don't want to do is distract him from the fight, and all he did was walk out. But I'm like, I thought the guy's walking with flags. I was laughing hysterically when that happened because I didn't even know what that was. And I'm like, this is some pretty impressive showmanship right now. This looked like a Beyonce concert or something, you know, not that I go attend Beyonce concerts all the time, but I'm just saying when you get dragged with your girlfriend, you're very impressed with like the girl singers have very impressive shows like her and Taylor Swift and you get dragged to those. So this had that wow, what a show. It's silly that we're talking about the light show that much, the walkout. But again, it might have been the most impressive thing on the card.
In terms of a writer, and like I said, I mean, if you guys already touched on this, just let me know. But did you think that he was gonna get knocked out? Because he's obviously Ryder's getting a lot of praise he went down like earlier in the fight, and everybody thought, okay, he's not going to last that much longer. And I think Ryder's team had said prior that their game plan was to try to get Canelo into the later rounds because they think he would gas out a little enough for Ryder to capitalize on it. Do you think that Ryder deserves the credit right now for lasting with somebody like Canelo? And also, do you think Canelo gassed out enough in the later rounds?
Yeah, I think me and Michael talked about this that I got to give Ryder credit. He stuck with the whole fight. It's one of those things because people want like an easy answer always. You always see on like, you know, after the fights, like, oh, Canelo's, he did terrible fight. And that's why Ryder looked good, or Ryder did an amazing job. But it's always a piece of everything. So I think Ryder did a much better job than I thought. He showed a lot of heart. I mean, he took some heavy blows early in the fight. He stuck with it. He put press, and then they came on at the end, and there's a few rounds at the end where it looked like he might have won. So I think Ryder, you got to give him a lot of credit. He did a much better fight than I think anybody suspected coming in. You got to say Canelo did look like he got a little tired at the end because he took his foot off the pedal. And Canelo, like we said, probably has a little bit of mileage on him. It's not the Canelo a couple years ago, and it's not making fun or, you know, taking anything away from Ryder. Canelo a couple of years ago, the guy that was just, you know, carving through everybody, then, you know, Kovalev knocked off, just went through everybody with the guy that used to throw thunder and just every punch. And you just could feel your knees would cripple when you saw that. That guy, I think, would have finished this fight. And I don't know when. I mean, Ryder was there to fight, so he might have lasted a while. But actually, in some ways, we might be thankful because Ryder might have taken a lot of punishment that would not have been nice to see.
Did we touch on Bivol yet?
No, we have not talked about Bivol.
So Bivol, obviously, Canelo's already made it known, especially after the fight, that he wants Bivol at 175. He wants to avenge that loss.
Yeah.
So right now, obviously, when you're at the top of any sport, or any type of field, especially if it's high profile, fame and all that, the criticism is going to be there. Canelo knows it. De La Hoya had it. Mayweather had it. You know, they all have it when you get to that level. It just comes with the territory. Right now, there's another narrative or debate or criticism going around that says Canelo should fight Bivol at 168. let Bivol says he wants to go down 168 and fight him for all the titles. But Canelo says, no, he wants the same terms as the first fight at 175. Because he does it because he said, he did say this. Canelo said that he doesn't want to get the reverse criticism and say, oh, no, you beat Bivol at his weight, at a weight below him. He's a champion above. You should have beat him there. It would have been a better win. That's what he says he doesn't want to deal with. He's like, no, because then you're going to criticize me anyways. It feels like he's going to get criticized either way. What do you think about whether the fight is at 168 or 175?
Personally, I'd be more interested in the fight at 168 with all of Canelo's titles on the line, because we saw the fight already. It adds something to it, right? It adds another dimension to it that it's like, okay, there's new stakes. And plus the last fight, I mean, I'm sure Canelo thinks it was a close fight. I don't remember it being that close a fight. So I'm not super excited to see the fight again in the upper weights. So Bivol says he can go down and win, I'd be much more interested in that. And that's me personally. Now, Canelo, he's not just a boxer. He's a business. The man owns gas stations all over Mexico. The guy has tons of product line. I mean, in America, we, I think, underestimate the star power of Canelo. If you go down to Mexico, that guy is massive in Mexico. And a lot of Hispanic community, the Mexican Americans in the southwestern United States who have strong connection. That guy owns, he has tons of products and stuff. He's a Michael Jordan-like figure with products and stuff down there. Huge fortune. So as a businessman, it's hard for me always to understand what his decision-making process is. He thinking like, I got to protect my super middleweight titles, my position at super middleweight, so I can, if something happens, I can come back and do that. Do I have to, is it for my fan base? Do I have to go up and beat Bivol? I don't know what his thinking is, but to me, I never blame the fighter for making decisions. I don't even ever blame the fighter for ever making decisions that are purely financial on what fight to take. The people I blame are the sanctioning organizations that should force people to defend their titles. But that's a different story. They're the guys that are not in they're the only entity in boxing who is supposed to protect the sport. Everybody else is there to make money. It's prize fighting. If you want a sport, sanctioning organization, that's your job to make it a sport. But for him, personally, I'd like to see him. If he's going to fight Bivol, I want to see the David Benavidez fight. That's the fight for me that's the most exciting. But if he's going to fight, I would be willing to see the Bivol fight again. I'd be interested, but I'd love it at 168. It's hard to get excited for a fight that was pretty clear cut the first time.
Do you personally have a difference, John, between the word exciting for a fight and the word competitive for a fight?
Usually, no. Usually, I mean, there's competitive fights that are just dull that I have no interest in because it's the two guys are not going to do anything. But for me, competitive is the, I guess we were talking earlier before the show about Romero versus Tank. That was exciting because of what Romero brought to the card, but that wasn't competitive, right? There was no sense that he was going to beat Tank Davis that night. So I would prefer a competitive fight where I felt that there was real stakes set online. And so I do have slight, I mean, I do think there's, I like exciting fights. I think there's slightly a difference, but yeah, a competitive fight where I think it's much more like a 50-50, or it's going to be there's more questions over who's going to win or the fights I want to see.
The reason I pose that question to you, John, is because I wanted to follow up with this. Do you think Benavidez against Canelo is more competitive, or Benavidez against Bivol is more competitive?
Well, I think it depends. If Bivol at 168 might be more I favor David Benavidez right now at 168 over Canelo. I'm sure a lot of people don't, but
what about against Bivol?
But Bivol against Canelo, that's the question, because I've never seen Bivol at 168. I have no clue what he's going to look like at that weight, and so there is probably more of a question mark. But the David Benavidez fight, I might favor David Benavidez, but I almost think that's a 50-50 fight. I give Benavidez like a 51-49% chance of winning that fight. That's, even if I favor him, that's an incredibly competitive fight right now, I think. So both of them I'd like to see. I mean, the problem is I probably David Benavidez too, because it's a new opponent I'm much more intrigued by, and he's a traditional, that's his traditional weight class. Bivol coming down it seems like a possible stretch. Like, we're pushing him to go too far down if he has to do it. But Bibble at the upper weight class against Canelo, we've already seen it. So, yeah, I'd rank Benavidez the fight I want to see the most, and then Bibble at 168. And then I'm not really enthusiastic. I don't know about you guys, but I'm not enthusiastic to see Canelo go back up and try it again.
What about Benavidez against Bibble, whether it's at 168 or 175?
Not at all until Benavidez can beat Canelo at 168. Until that happens, then I don't want to see him try Bibble.
I mean,
Bibble better beef is the fight we need to see.
No, right. And I get that in terms of like prize fighting. Canelo's a big name. Benavidez is also Mexican-American. But in terms of, me and Mike have had this conversation on past shows numerous times. I think competitiveness, it's Canelo and it's Benavidez and Bibble, whether it's at 168 or 175. I think the competition between those two in the ring is a lot higher than Canelo against either of them.
I would be super excited that fight, except the only thing like limiting is like there's work left undone by both of them. And I want Benavidez to complete the 168 mission before going up to fight Bibble. And if Bibble's going to go down and fight Benavidez, I want him to go down and I guess finish the storyline. But Bibble, he only should go down to 168 if titles are on the line, and titles won't be on the line until Benavidez fights Canelo. So that's, I don't know. It's just weird because it's like titles don't mean anything. They're made up in boxing, but I still find them important sometimes. I want that extra little sprinkles on top to make those fights more meaningful sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So where does, Canelo's already said that he wants Bibble. I feel like even though Bibble's trying to play hardball, I understand. I feel like Bibble's going to end up just agreeing for the rematch because it's the biggest payday he can get. So I expect that to be in September. Where does someone like Ryder go from here?
I think Ryder retires. I mean, I don't know if I've heard anything, but I imagine he had a career payday for that fight. I mean, what other fights next for him that's even going to come close to paying and being that prestigious for him, right? It's like you've had a long career, took a lot of punishment. I'm always happy to see guys leave with some money in their pocket. And I hope he made a lot of money and saved it. I'd be very happy if he left the sport. I mean, not that I like think I'll be gone, unless you can still fight at the very top and compete and make big money, I'm not one of those guys that like seeing people continue to compete because it's, you know, we see what happens to people's health that they continue on. And so unless you're being compensated for your health, I'm not big on seeing people continue. So I'd like to see him retire.
Where does Canelo's next fight in September land? Vegas?
I think it has to be Vegas. That's where the money is. I guess they can do an arena show somewhere. It depends who, but Vegas. I thought for sure he would think about Benavidez just because I think that's the bigger money fight that's going to generate more money and he'll probably make more. But again, like I said, he's a businessman and there's other considerations probably going on in his head about who's he going to fight and why. And I don't know what DAZN's offering him, what guarantees and stuff. I think it has to be Vegas. I mean, can you think of anywhere else that they're not going to do it in Mexico? I don't. Well, a Bibble is possible you could do in Mexico because, you know, he's not the type as he can't argue for a big split of the gate or something.
Right.
Yeah. But the TV money still that I think they're going to want that to generate something for DAZN. So the TV money, the pay-per-view money, they're going to want that in the U.S. for the market. Didn't Bibble have trouble with getting paid last time because of his Russian?
I think so. Yeah, I think they sorted it out, but I think he did have some difficulty.
Yeah, I just wonder if it's been sorted out. Did he get like U.S. citizenship now, or did he move here?
Hopefully,
resident. Is that how he's doing it? Because I'm just curious how they're getting around. Not the State Department coming in and hijacking all his money again.
I wonder if he lives out here for a good portion of the year, but yeah. I wonder if he like has started to make his home out here like completely. I would assume he did.
I would have looked into this earlier because I'm intrigued by this, but as I was telling Michael before, the last few months I've not been as due diligent in investigating stuff as I normally do because I was taking care of my dad who was sick and I had pneumonia for a couple of weeks. So I had a story I wanted to do about the Garcia Tank Davis fight that I couldn't even get done, even though I interviewed a bunch of people. So you know, blame them that, and I'm lazy. That's my two things. That'll be my two excuses for not getting stuff done.
So here's the golden question to wrap this up on a bow. Yeah. Who's the face of boxing? Tank Davis or Canelo Alvarez?
Oh man, I can't say Tank is yet, but he is quickly becoming the American face of boxing. I think Canelo probably is still there. He's got more years at the top, and he's permeated the more casual fan base. You know, I mean, interesting thing about boxing too is like we were talking off the show is that the boxing fan base is not the bigger fan base for boxing is based on ethnicity in America. You know, the Hispanic fan base, and the Hispanic fan base is divided in a bunch of groups, Puerto Rican and Mexican and very Central American countries. There's that. There's the African American Black community. There's immigrant communities of Filipino or immigrant communities from Eastern Europe and stuff in America. That's the primary, the big fan base in America. So there's the UK too, but that's in the UK. We're gonna get the UK separate than America. There's not a lot of the Irish immigration stopped decades ago. So, but
2014.
Yes, so that's the big. But that's the big fan bases. So Tank is quickly becoming, I guess, the African American fan base, which then eventually spills over to old boxing, like Mayweather did. But right now, Canelo, I'd say, is number one. But if you add globally, I think there's a case to make that Tyson Fury is the face of boxing, even though he probably, even in the UK, though, I think Joshua's been the bigger attraction over the years. But Fury is more well known in the US. He's just more well known as the heavyweight champion. He's crossed over. He's more well known amongst MMA fans, UFC fans, more well known amongst pro wrestling fans because he shows up at those events. And then on top of it, boxing is regional, but it's in a way is monstrous in Japan. He's probably his biggest star there in many ways than our biggest stars in America are. And we kind of miss that because, it's in Japan. It's the time difference when he fights over there. But he does, just incredible gates and stuff and numbers over there. So, but right now I'd say it's Canelo or Fury, depending how you look at it. But Tank Davis is coming on strong. And he looks like he might be. And I saw, I knew this was going to happen. The lightweight division is just stacked with guys that are interesting. And as soon as they start meeting, especially Tank, it's in Ryan Garcia, as soon as those guys start fighting each other, the attention there, that's the future division of the Sugar Ray Leonards and Haglers and Duran, the Four King era. It might not happen, but that was the area you look at that and go, that's the potential to have a Four Kings type star power.
Yeah, that's the hope, right? That's the hope.
It doesn't fall apart, and we don't get all of them will retire quick or get I don't want to jinx. I'm not even say the possibilities. Don't want to jinx it. Don't want people
they're
calling.
They're all young enough. They're all young enough to still have some time to do.
That's the great. We got. We just had Garcia versus Davis. We got Loma coming up with Haney. That's that's what we've been waiting for. And then after that, who knows? The talk is they want to get Top Rank wants to get Shakur Stevens versus. Haney, and if that happens, my God, if that happens, we are in that era. If we can get if Frank Martin then can go fight Tank Davis, and if Ryan Garcia comes back and fights Haney like he wants, now I'm all excited again for fights that haven't happened that we never know will, but we're hoping.
you're a dreamer. You're a dreamer, John.
I'm a dreamer, but I have hope with those guys. Those guys seem like they want it, so.
You've been around the fight game this long and you still have hope and dreams, John?
I have no hope in any other weight class except that. That's the only one that I have hope. That's the only one that I expect. Because they're so young, a three-year wait, it's a possibility that'll happen.
That's true. Yeah. The time is on our side as a fan, so hopefully it happens.
7 years from now, we'll be coming back here talking about what happened.
Will, yeah. We're going to have to pull these sound bites and then pull them out and discuss them. In the co-main event of that card in Mexico, Julio Cesar Martinez gets the 20th professional victory of his career with the 11th round TKO over Ronald Batista. And Martinez retains his WBC flyweight championship of the world. What did you think of Martinez's win, John?
Well, we were talking about this again before the show, me and Michael, and I don't want to put words in his mouth. So I'll use what I said because I can't remember exactly what he said, but I was not impressed with Julio Cesar Martinez. If I remember the odds, Batista was basically a no-hoper, right? He came in and was like, I don't know what the odds were, but no one gave him a chance. And he did get a lot and he got stopped, but that fight should have been over from the moment it started, you would think, the way it came in. And I'm one of those guys that don't like saying anything negative about fighters because they're the ones going out there doing it. But he strikes me as a guy that's hit his limitations and people are aware of them and they've caught on. And I don't know. I don't have much hope or faith when he goes against better competition going forward. I don't know. Is that harsh? Am I wrong? Or
No. That's just your opinion. Yeah, yeah.
It's my opinion.
As long as you can defend it and stand by it.
Yeah, yeah. But like, what was your guys' opinion of the fight? I'll ask you that.
Let's go with Mike. What'd you think?
Go with you. I want to hear you and I want to build off you.
Well, I mean, I was surprised that it took him until the 11th. I know because Batista was obviously a massive underdog on the betting line and all that. And I think us as hardcore viewers of the sport, I think we expected that. But I don't know, I've been impressed with Martinez ever since he took the fight against Chocolatito Gonzalez in San Diego. I think he moved up in weight for that, even though he lost. But I don't know, maybe that loss, even though he won this past weekend, I don't know, maybe that loss gave him a little bit less of a step, you know? I'm still a fan of Martinez. I was surprised that it took him until the 11th and that Batista kind of executed his game plan pretty well, even though he got stopped. Like, he lasted until the 11th. But I'm still a fan of Martinez. Yeah. And I still think that they could make some money and some good fights with him.
I'll add on to that. I think you're right, though, because I was actually impressed with him in the Chocolito fight. But ever since that fight, because he fought Carmona, right?
Right.
Since then, and that I wasn't as impressed with him. And I think, I don't know, maybe Gonzalez took a lot out of him, a lot more than I thought.
That's what I'm thinking. That's what I think.
That's where I'm going to hit a wall. Like, I think we. That it happens, man. Sometimes you lose and you just never recover. And I just get that sense, but who knows? I mean, he might turn around, but I had that sense that he's not the same fighter. The last two fights. What'd you think,
Mike? Yeah, kind of the same as you two. I mean, I think Eddie Reynoso, what calls him, was it my little crazy or my little wild man or whatever it is. And, you know, with people that we know that kind of like hang around the Reynoso gym, it sounds like that is him outside of the ring, you know, like he likes to kind of party and drink and he gets up, goes up and down in weight. He's had a couple of run-ins with law enforcement before. So I don't know whether it's just stuff externally, which is affecting him in the ring, you know, trying to make weight, or is it just because kind of, obviously when people are coming up, they're kind of built into monsters, right? They're given well-selected opponents. And maybe now it's because he's at the topper end. He's not necessarily getting to pick. Obviously, for this fight, it was this a mandatory?
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
I don't think it was. I think it was just a picked opponent. But you know, obviously, when you get to the upper end of the rankings, you know, you've got your mandatories. You're facing the best in the division, so maybe it's just the fact that now he's facing more people that, you know, aren't carefully selected to make him look like the monster he was before.
What about a fight with Bam Rodriguez?
I think he loses to Bam, and I think he loses to Sonny Edwards.
What do you think, John?
I think I 100% agree. I mean, it might be the fight to make based on whatever they're going to offer money-wise.
I think it's a big Mexican and Mexican-American fight.
Yeah.
And maybe put it in Texas, and they can do pretty well. Even in L.A., I think they would do pretty decent.
I think they would get good TV fees for that. The networks would be would be willing to put up a sizable fee for that kind of fight because it would draw, but. I don't see him beating Bam. I think Bam hurts him, tell you the truth, at what I've seen in the last. Well, I mean, maybe not. Well, yeah, I think he hurts him. I'm not going to go with my gut. I think he hurts him. But, I mean, where else is he going to get a money fight at that weight class, right? So.
Do you think, who do you think is the top in that division? Is it Bam or Sonny Edwards?
I go with Bam. I just, from what I've seen, I mean, it's Edwards looks good, but I don't know. Again, it's a gut instinct thing that just Bam looks like he just, he has something special. But what's wait and see when he gets better competition, gets, you know, maybe I'll be like, you know what? A lot of it's just you beating the crap out of guys that just aren't that good. And that's, you know, but right now I'm a big Bam guy. So
I think Mike's a big Sonny guy.
I was guessing that. I can't imagine how, why it would be, but I was guessing that.
I was hoping you were going to skip me, to be honest. Bam or Sonny, dude, that's a hard one. And you know what? I'm going to maybe shock you both. Just because Sonny has been put down a couple of times in his career, and maybe that's just because he was fighting people that he was probably not taking too much. You know, he wasn't fighting the best because they were lesser opponents, and he's been caught a couple of times and put on his butt. Maybe Bam, because if Bam hits you, it's going to be a lot harder.
I thought you were going to say Sonny.
Yeah, that's a hard one. That's two very different type of styles, but they both move, you know. But you know, Bam hits a hell of a lot harder than Sonny does.
Yeah, that could be the X factor in that potential fight.
Exactly. That's why I think I'm going to go with Bam in my pick there.
Also on the card, real quickly, Gabriel Golas Valenzuela gets a split decision win over Steve Spark for the WBA Intercontinental Super Lightweight title. And then also The Nail, Alexander Gvozdyk, returns with a 6-round TKO over Ricards, Mike?
Balotniks? I think it's Ricards Balotniks.
Ricards Balotniks, who takes the 7th loss of his career. John, what do you think about The Nail's return here? Because, I mean, a couple years ago, 5-6 years ago, he was in the thick of it, and now he just popped up again.
Well, I mean, yeah, you run into Beterbiev, and he kind of does, you know, you do need to take a break after that. So, understandable. But he looked good. I was with some people watching the fight, so they were not incredibly into this fight, so it was hard to pay attention when people are asking you questions left and right. But I thought he looked good. It was a nice comeback win from him. I don't know where he goes from this, though. Where do they have an opponent then and talk with him yet? Or, you know, I mean, any ideas of where his career, what they want to do?
What do you think, Mike? Where does he go?
I mean, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because, you know, that division really at the minute is kind of taken up for a little bit of time. But he does have that name. He is with the Reynosos now. So I can imagine, you know, they've probably got some push. You know, Reynoso, Canelo, Mauricio Sulaiman, all in the same bed pretty much. So, you know, I'm sure he can probably get something with the WBC since he was the WBC champion previously.
Yeah, I think that I completely forgot about the Reynoso association now. I think you're totally right. I think the Reynoso Association, obviously in turn with the Canelo name, Canelo being there in the gym, that's definitely going to earn him some exposure and probably a couple big fights here and there with some decent paydays. So, I think that's right on the money.
Did you get some T-shirts for Reynoso Cartel on it?
Yeah, that's definitely a big X factor there. And also this past weekend from the Resorts World Arena in Birmingham, England, on Sky Sports, Joshua Boazzi remains undefeated with a 10-round unanimous decision win over Pavel Stepien, who takes the first loss of his career. Boazzi gets the victory by scores of 100-90, 98-92, and 97-94. John, what's your take on Joshua Boazzi? What do you think of him?
Well, I didn't see the fight, so that one I did not watch over the weekend. I think it was on where was that playing in the U.S.? Was that on the Fight Network? Here, I can't remember where it was available in the U.S. on that one because I was so busy with the UFC. And then
that's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah, so I didn't get to see it. Where he goes, I'm not sure. Wasn't there some talk of him fighting what's his name? We just had a recent fight with we just were talking about it. Anthony Yard.
Anthony Yard. Weird,
throwing out that they want him to see him fight. And I guess that's interesting. Although, I get that, you know, why not? That's a fight. I would probably pay attention to that fight. I would watch it.
What'd you think, Mike? What'd you think about Boazzi's win and where does he go next?
like his all of his career so far. Meh. Pretty boring.
Now, you're not impressed. Huh? You've never really been impressed with the guy.
Because he came in all guns blazing. He's, you know, had this good amateur career. And then, like I said, you know, last week when I was on with Abe, it's every single time he gets put in with a big fight, he gets injured. But he never gets injured when he's got these other fighters, you know, these lesser known names, like these B level, C level fighters. He gets in, you know, this was supposed to be like, you know, his Sky debut. This was his boxer debut. If anything, I think Eddie Hearn is probably laughing that Sky overpaid and stole Okoli and stole Boazzi. And those two are the face of Sky Sports boxing. Jeez. It's like they're the face of NyQuil. They send you to sleep. It's awful. You put all of your money behind two people like that with the face of Sky Sports boxing, and they're just terrible to watch. Effective boxers, but they're not going to bring you in to watch or anything like that. You're like, oh, it's probably going to go 12 rounds. You know, I'll just catch it in the morning. I'll just, you know, see it. It's not like you're putting your money in like a Mike Tyson or, you know, a Canelo or an AJ or Tyson Fury can have boring fights, but he's, you know, I think he maybe knows that. So that's why he's really good in like the press conferences and the build up and stuff like that. You know, you watch it for that sort of stuff. So I bet Eddie Hearn's laughing all the way to the bank. Like, oh my God. Like, it's like he sent over two secret agents that just stole all the money.
That's true. That's true. And that, John, right there is why Boazzi's team has stopped answering our emails.
Right. So. Oh, that could explain it. That definitely explained it. But I will say this for Tyson Fury, because he's a guy who's the most dreadfully boring boxer I've watched in a long, you know, his last, what, 3-4 fights, all been incredibly entertaining. I mean, even when they're one-sided, the Derek Chisora, I mean, that was a joke of a fight, but still, he finished him, you know. And,
I think he's learned the last couple years, or obviously the last several fights, a couple fights he's had, that like he needs to, he's like, since his profile has risen so much, especially since the Wilder fights, I think he has that expectation of himself when he fights to put on, to be a little bit more entertaining. So I think he's learned that in the ring.
Oh yeah, that might be part of it. The other part is too, is I just wonder when he fought Wilder, when he put on the mask to take Wilder on directly, that he's like, realizes I'm huge, I can hurt people. And I might as well hurt them and end the fight than sit around and risk getting knocked out myself or something happening, you know, because I can use my length and dodge. But, you know, he can, I mean, he's not a Wilder puncher. He's not like, you know, one punch, but he's got a lot of mass behind every punch. And if he hits and he can hit, it's just like it cumulatively, that's damage. And I think I just wonder if that's part of it too. Like he just realized, man, I can, when I lean in and just start throwing on people, I can hurt them after a while.
Yeah, ever since moving away from, you know, being trained by his uncle, Peter Fury, who has that very twitchy, long style, kind of a defensive style, since changing and going with Sugar Hill Stewart.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely changed his style and, you know, become more of a kind of pressure fighter. And he brings forward big, heavy blows. And then, yeah, now he's kind of
he likes to lean on you now, and you got to carry the weight. Yeah. And you're getting that cinch with him, you know.
That would suck to deal with.
Yeah, but you think like, you know, the whole thought, oh, you're so tall and lengthy, you want to keep your distance. But no, he's like, I want to get close because you can't, even as tall as I'm, even if I'm this close, you can't reach my head. I'm towering over you and I can just put pressure down on you. So it's, let's make the Usyk fight. Come on, people.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Moving on to fight previews this upcoming Saturday, the 13th of May, from the Cosmopolitan in Las Vegas, Nevada, from the Chelsea Ballroom. On Showtime, Rolando Romero, 14-1, goes up against Ismael Barroso, 24-3-2. This is for the interim WBA 140-pound world title. What do you think about this matchup, John? Where does Romero, is he the favorite here?
Oh, I think he has to. I mean, Barroso's like a last-minute replacement for Albert Pujol, so... Who I know he got yanked for supposedly a failed drug test, but... I think, Mike, you were telling me before that they were claiming that it wasn't a failed. It was like some medication wasn't cleared or something.
Yeah, so his team said that it was a medication faux pas. They forgot to put it on either the VADA list or something like that. And then he came back positive for it, and they held their hands up, sort of saying like, hey, you know, it's our bad. Like, we understand, you know, we've got to step aside. And, yeah, Ismael Barroso gets to step in on last-minute notice. So, PBC and Showtime seem to love Rolando Romero. You know, he can do no wrong.
He's an entertaining guy. That's I think, you know, that's what he's got going for him. He's very entertaining. I'm not 100% sold. I think he's good, but I don't think he's like world class good. But he's a perfect B side if you build him up, because he can talk and make a fight much more interesting than it'd be without him.
Perfect, John. Perfect heel or perfect villain.
Exactly, he's got that pro wrestling vibe.
John, how much stock do you think Mayweather Promotions and like Leonard Ellerbe and Floyd are we going to put into Romero? Because obviously they're back at, obviously, as of the Ryan Garcia fight, mm-hmm. they are associated with Tank Davis again in some form or fashion. But
yeah,
I think a lot of people, if you kind of examine it, it's not the partnership that it was before. I'm sure Tank is in the driver's seat. Like there was no Mayweather Promotions on the banners for the Ryan Garcia yeah. fight. It was all GTD, Golden Boy and PBC and stuff like that. How much stock do you think Mayweather Promotions is going to put on Romero now that he's like the guy under their banner in a sense?
I mean, I think they could. I could see Mayweather. I think Mayweather loved him before because he loved the way he talked. He loved the way he built up a fight. I mean, I think, I think Floyd is smart enough to know that this guy is not going to be, you know, he's not Tank Davis. He's not a top talent. He's not Devin Haney. He's none of those guys in those divisions. He can't compete with those guys. Probably. I mean, who knows? Maybe he can, but I don't see it. I don't see him being at that level. I see him the step below, but you can make money on the step below, you know, and especially as the B side, if the division starts building up, any B sides, you can make money on the B side. And I think that's where he sees the value in this guy. We can build him up and he can help churn probably a pay-per-view in the future. I think a lot of those guys are going to start migrating to pay-per-view because the star power is just going to increase, especially again, Tank Davis. Build Romero up. You got a B side, you get a percentage of that pay-per-view, even as the B side. That's money.
That's true. What do you think, Mike?
I think if the rumor that we're probably going to talk about later in the news and notes is true, and Ryan Garcia is a free agent, Ryan Garcia has previous with Rolly Romero from those videos from back in the day in Mayweather's gym where Rolly's kind of beating him up and stuff like that. If PBC can get Ryan, then you've got your perfect hero, villain, A-side, B-side. Yeah, so I think they would put a lot of stock into Rolly and try to build that up into a huge WWE style press conference, fight week type fight.
And that's a perfect one too, because those guys are known commodities to the fan bases that they're selling to. They're known, if you're, you know, the Garcia, Tank Davis, now an overlapping fan base because they're both aware of each other, but Romero is now right in the people are aware of him. So you could draw over a lot of those guys that find his antics interesting and think he's good. So it's additional dollars right there. It's very, very smart matchmaking booking from the prize fighting side. Again, it's not a sport. It's prize fighting.
Prize fighting.
We just did PBC's job there, John.
Yeah, look at that. We can get a little percentage. I should go call them. Let me call Al Heyman here and say, listen,
we should. There's an email out there somewhere. I think we have it. We'll send it. And also this upcoming weekend from the Stockton Arena in Stockton, California, on ESPN and the Plus, ESPN Plus. Jason Maloney, 25-2, goes up against Vincent Astrolabio, 18-3. This is for the vacant WBO bantamweight world title. What do you think about the Maloney brothers, John?
I'm aware of him a little bit. I have Australian friends that are aware of him, and he's all I'm really aware of though is I watch him lose to the monster. So, right. So this is really, I don't want to be, you know, that's all I remember him from. So I think he's probably a pretty good fighter, but that's all I remember him from. And all I know of Astrolabio, who has a great name, is I can't forget it because Rigondeaux bought him a little while ago. Right.
Oh, that's right.
Because the name, and that's the only, so I guess I'm showing my casual nature here that I'm not that hardcore in the fan, except I know their names from other fighters.
That's true. And also on that card, Zanabek. I always get his name. I butcher his name. Alam Kanuli. I
don't think he's the only guy who has two spellings. If you look anywhere,
yeah, exactly. 13-0 goes up against Stephen Butler, 32-3-1 for the WBO middleweight title. So a pretty good card up there in Stockton. It's kind of interesting how they put that card in Stockton. I wonder how they decided on that location for this fight. But I don't know. Maybe Maybe it was a cheap site fee or something.
I don't know if these guys are working with Nate Diaz or something, but that's
maybe I would invite Nate Diaz to these cards. I mean, I guess
maybe. I mean, there's some boxing gyms and stuff up there, so maybe there's I don't know, but I'm kind of intrigued by them. I'm actually intrigued by both cards. The other card, I think, isn't Gary Russell still on it or not? Roland Romero, yeah. Is he still on it? Although, his opponent, Ken Cruz, again, I feel bad I'm right on boxers, guys. Good, but Ken Cruz, I saw him fight at the Minneapolis Armory, and I didn't think he was, I was not super impressed with his wins. Same guy twice, if I remember right, back to back. So, and
John, we wanted to ask your take as we move into the news and notes, but we wanted to get your take on just because even though it deals with combat sports in a way, but also entertainment. But boxing has been mentioned in past interviews by the executives. Endeavor purchasing the WWE, as I mentioned, the executives at WWE have mentioned recently, within the last maybe year or so, about possibly stepping into the boxing landscape in the future. Do you think that's possible? Is it, I don't want to say it's imminent, but I mean, what do you think is a realistic time frame for them if they decide to jump into the game?
I go back and forth on that because on one side, there's a quote that someone said, Ari Emanuel said. So it's hearsay, it's apocryphal. So I don't know if he really said it, but they told me he said it. And what the quote was, the problem with boxing is it's 30% for me, 70% for the boxers. And I need it to be 70% for me and 30% for the boxers, which is basically what the UFC is even worse than that. And pro wrestling is like, it's even worse than the UFC, the percent that the wrestlers get. Those are extremely highly profitable industries. Boxing's not. Boxing's extremely unprofitable. You know, a good boxing promoter, if your EBITDA earnings, not your profit, even though they're often in the single digits, if you get up to 10%, you're doing good. So part of me says they're not going to get involved in that because there's too much risk. There's not enough profit. But the other part of me says, and there were rumors before that Endeavor was in talks with PBC, supposedly. And I got it from good sources that they were. I don't know if, you know, how close they were to purchasing PBC, but acquiring like a PBC makes sense to me, or a Top Rank, because the way Endeavor works is you just finance it, but you don't take over the business. They could go to Al Haymon and say, you keep running the Al Haymon, your Al Haymon Productions, your Al Haymon company, sports. Now I can't remember Haymon's company's name. Al Haymon Entertainment.
Haymon Sports and Entertainment.
Haymon, I think that's it. Haymon Sports and Entertainment, which is, you know, in their connection to PBC, you can still run that side, just like Dana White and the UFC guys run their show the way they want to do. Just wait, we're going to let Vince McMahon run the WWE, but we'll sign you. And if they did that, it's like, okay, profit margin is still low, but what they could do with that is they could take a boxing entity they have. I do think they will. If they did, this is just me guessing, they would acquire a boxing, someone with boxing knowledge. Maybe they let Dana White run off and do his own couple events because he wants to, but I don't think they would put Dana White in charge of the entity that's going to do it for him, because he's not working in the current landscape. He is used to being an emperor and getting a dictator and everything his way. It doesn't work that way in boxing. You have to, the boxers have a lot more power. So you'd acquire them. But what that would give you is, yes, the profit margins wouldn't be high, but at first, but because you can use WWE and UFC, you can rope them together and possibly get better TV deals, because the competition for all those are each other. And so you can basically say, oh, you don't want to sign, you want to not sign your boxing entity and go after UFC. Well, we're not going to let you get UFC unless you sign this boxing entity or you sign pro wrestling. So you can play off each other to increase the TV revenues right there and use it for sponsorships and gates, because, you know, you can go to the same venues and basically package deal them to get better deals from all three. So you're going to be the exclusive home as long as you pay more for these three. And so you can't use, because people are used to using them to compete against each other. Like, oh, UFC, you're not going to give me a good deal. We're going to go with WWE. We're going to go with the boxing man. We don't need to cave into whatever you want. Now it's like, hey, we're going to go to the boxing event, you know, this boxing promoter, and said, shit, he's working with WWE and UFC. We have no way to play them against each other. So you can increase the revenue a lot for a boxing entity, and yes, boxers take a lot, but if you increase it, but you get to keep most of the increase for yourself, it suddenly it's a lot more profitable business. So I could see them doing something like that. Plus, it gives more leverage for their other entities. So I always was of the thought that no, there's no way they're going to do it, because boxing, again, is not like UFC, MMA, and pro wrestling, where you get to keep you have monopolies and you own the sport and you get to collect all the money. But I could see them looking at it and say, you know what, that enhances our portfolio. And it would add something to it. So I've kind of turned around on that one.
Moving on to the news and notes of this section of the show this week. Regis Progre, world champion at 140 pounds, possibly the best 140-pound fighter in the world, has signed a 3-fight deal with Eddie Hearn's Matchroom Boxing. I believe his debut under the banner, or at least... the next one is in New Orleans, his hometown, in the next 6 weeks. So they timed it perfectly. He's coming right away. What'd you think about this decision, John?
I mean, I was disappointed because I don't know who he's going to fight with Matchroom. I mean, I don't know who they have there for him. If Top Rank has all the top talent in those weight divisions from 135, 140. There was a lot of great fights. I wanted to see him in those with those guys. And also he said that the Top Rank deal was paying more. So it makes no sense to me that you take the deal that pays less and doesn't provide the better competition. But he had a video out for his reasoning why, and I haven't had a chance to watch it, so I don't know what his reasoning was. But I was, as a fan, I was disappointed because I'm not seeing the big fights I'd like to see. If not Top Rank, PBC is the other one that offers more opportunities for big fights. And on top of that, it's like again, it's prize fighting, that you're taking the lesser money doesn't quite make sense to me. So I don't get it, but who knows? Maybe I'll watch the video. Maybe I'll explain it and it'll all make sense.
What did you think, Mike, Progre signing with Eddie Hearn?
I was surprised. Like you said, you know, at times, you know, Matchroom obviously seems to be well run. Everyone always kind of compliments them, says, you know, they pay on time, easy to work with and stuff like that compared to some other promotions. But yeah, when a lot of other people are on the other side of the street, as they say in a boxing term, it's like, you know, what do they have? Or maybe Regis is thinking, I have the WBC title, they can come to me. You know, they have Liam Paro, they have Jack Catterall. It looks like they're going to be signing, is it Subrio Mateus? Is that how you pronounce it?
I think they're supposed to meet this week, I think.
Yeah, so I think doesn't he have like the WBA or something like that? So I think that, you know, if he gets to Matchroom, then, you know, he may get the chance of getting another world title there. So yeah, sometimes I think maybe they just believe that their name is big enough, and the fact he has the green and gold strap is hoping that, you know, he can attract people his way. And then maybe, like we said, Ryan Garcia is rumored to be a free agent, which we're going to touch on, and maybe he's going to end up at Matchroom as well.
The other possibility matters how long he's a free agent. Golden Boy might feel pressure from DAZN because they need DAZN too to, like, let's make a matchup with the Matchroom guys. And so these are our biggest stars, the biggest possible fight. I mean, that's the one possibility, I think, Garcia, but I don't know when Garcia's contract's up with Golden Boy. If he's going to be stuck there for a little while, then that might be a fight they can kind of down the line plan on. But if he's gone, if he's a free agent, I guess throw money at him. He'll, you know, fight wherever, you know, you can be a network free agent like Canelo, just move around every time wherever the money is.
Are we talking about Regis or Ryan?
Oh, Ryan, sorry, Ryan on that part. But for Regis,
I think Ryan, he doesn't have the confidence to be like a free agent fight by fight. I think he would sign a long-term deal with somebody because I don't think he has the confidence of that a type of fighter like that.
Well, I guess the other possibility too is Devin Haney's contract up with Tom breaks up, even though they're talked to continue. And there's always, you know, you start throwing out these kind of fantasy stuff. But if Devin Haney is serious about moving to 140, he's talked about it eventually. But I think he says he wants to stay at 135 for another couple fights. I think he's maybe holding out for the Davis fight because, you know, it's a big money fight. But if he's serious really about moving to 140 and Regis is the number one guy with the belt, that's an obvious one too. Move up, make that a fight. And I'm sure you can probably get a healthy sum of money for doing that.
That's true. That's true. And also Matchroom was busy with these signings. They signed Olympic gold medalist from 2020, Andy Cruz, also to a long-term promotional deal. That was also announced this past Saturday. in Mexico. What do you think about Andy Cruz, John?
I'm hesitant to see. He comes with a lot of prestige, a lot of stuff from the amateurs. But I'm hesitant to see at his age what he can do going forward, because Usyk is an oddity. Usyk's a one in a million what he did. And so, you know, people look at other guys and think, is the same thing could possibly happen with another Olympic type boxer. So I'm intrigued, but I'm not as excited as I think they made it sound like we should be when they announced it. I'm more intrigued to see what he can do.
That's true. Yeah. I'm definitely looking forward to that, to see how he develops with them. And then also, we talked about Davis a couple of times, but he did have some legal troubles where I guess it looks like it was finalized. He did avoid actual jail time in the criminal hit and run case that he had in his hometown of Baltimore, Maryland. He was sentenced to 90 days of house arrest at the home of his trainer, Calvin Ford, which is within the city limits of Baltimore, and was given 3 years of probation. He was also given 200 hours of community service. We had touched on it, Mike and I, before, because we thought it was strange, because the original judge had said that, had indicated that he needed jail time, and had even rejected like a plea deal that they had struck with the DA. But then the sentencing judge was actually different. It was a different person. So it seems like he lucked out right there. Who knows what happened? Who knows what happened with that situation?
Lucked out, you know.
You got really lucky.
Good connections.
Uncle Al pulling strings.
Yeah. So, but yeah. I mean, that's a get. I mean, I listen. It sounded like a terrible thing he did, and I was a little. I could understand the victim being annoyed that he hasn't apologized, and that he. I don't know why he's driving around without a license, getting accidents left and right. When
famous with all that money.
Yeah, there's. The people that represent him, that advise him, got to be saying, "We're giving you a driver. You're rich. You don't need to do this stuff. You are really rich now. We are going to hire someone to take care of this from now on." But at the same time, people get worked up, and like, it's hard for me to get too excited, because boxers is a different mentality. A lot of them, they come from hard scrabble lives and have different mentality. And also, there's boxers dealing with, Kadyrov, a Chechenian warlord that kills people in his hometown, or represented by gangsters, Kinahan and stuff. So, a car accident incident, which is terrible in itself, it's hard for me to get worked up over that compared to all the other stuff in combat sports that are just terrible.
Crazy world of combat sports. Crazy world. And also, Josh Kambosos has been announced to face Maxie Hughes in a lightweight fight in July in Shawnee, Oklahoma. So the top rank putting in these good fights, but they're putting them in random locations here. So maybe the site fee is really low or something. But Kambosos is still co-promoted by Lou DiBella, with Lou DiBella. So this is an association, so that he's still involved there. And there was also announced recently that Arizandy Lara, a former world champion, will defend his middleweight title. Or his current, he does still kind of have a title, actually, at 160, against Danny Garcia. Danny Garcia, I think, is his debut, right, at 160 pounds in August. What do you think about that matchup, John?
I haven't thought about it much, because I haven't put much thought into it. But I mean, I like Danny Garcia, but I got to think about that one, because I'm not really enthusiastic about that fight. Tell you the truth. It's just not, it doesn't strike me as something that's, I don't think Danny Garcia is like over the hill and stuff, but he hasn't been fighting a lot lately since he lost to Spence. He has what, one fight last year?
I think so.
I'm not sold on it. Let's put it that way. And it's at what weight class this fight?
150. It's a catchweight at 155.
See, yeah, he's already undersized. No, I don't know. I'm not really excited. Maybe when it comes around, I'll be interested. But I'm not right now. I'm not excited at all.
Yeah, we'll see how it gets closer. It's supposed to be reportedly in Brooklyn, Barclays Center. So we'll see. And then also, Jaime Munguia, Golden Boy, announced that he will meet Sergey Derevchenko in a middleweight fight on June 10th in Ontario, California, which is just outside of LA, about 40 miles just outside of LA.
Down the street from me and Danny.
Yeah, not too far, not too far. So Munguia against Derevchenko. Is this the best fighter that Munguia's faced so far, John?
Oh yeah, I think so. I'm trying to think. I'm racking my brain for anybody better that he's faced. I mean, he's turned down some other fights. So best fight he's fighter he's faced, not best fighter he's ever been offered. Right, that's what we're talking about.
Faced.
So the best fighter, yes, this will be the best fighter he's faced. I don't know what he has. Sergey has left in him, but I still think he's pretty good. I got a feeling he's still pretty good.
Yeah, so I still think this is still kind of a dangerous fight in a way. Not as dangerous as like Derevchenko was a couple years back, but
yeah,
it's dangerous enough. So yeah,
he probably did a good job waiting long enough that he's taking some damage and mileage and stuff. But I mean, the guy put on pretty. I mean, arguably, he beat Golovkin, and
that's true. Yeah,
and he gave a decent fight to Charlo. It's the
that
guy's
body
not...
shot. That body shot. That should. I don't know why the referee stepped into that. That was a nasty shot.
Yeah, so that's he has competed against the very best and held his own. And so even a step back from that means a very dangerous, pretty skilled fighter.
And I forgot to put it on the notes. That fight's at super middleweight.
Oh, okay.
Oh, interesting. 168.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. Wonder if Munguia is gonna stay there. That's interesting. And then also finally, as we round the finish line here of this week's episode of The Last Round. John, where does reportedly Ryan Garcia, like we touched on, is a free agent, according to Eddie Hearn, that he's heard some rumors. If that's actually true, where do you see Ryan Garcia landing?
Well, if he ends up leaving, I could see DAZN throwing money at Matchroom to keep him around because they've done a lot to build him up. But to me, you'd have to say PBC is probably the best fit for him the way that, because PBC is built on kind of star power, and they do a pretty, the Showtime connection, they do a pretty good job of building up the personalities. But the other possibility is, to me, it's an obvious rivalry opponent in the future down the line is Devin Haney because of their amateur record. It just sells itself. You just play the tapes of them being 2-2. So if I guess part of it, see, where does Devin end up? Because if Devin, of course, the other problem is too is when you have a promoter, you want your promoter focused on you, not another guy in your weight class. And that's why a lot of guys, end up being the best end up being split at different promoters, because you don't feel the promoter is giving you your best interest in not being, it's almost like a manager. You want them to be focused on you. But I could see, but the Devin Haney fight just seems, if Devin's going to move up to 140, it seems so natural. I could see him on like a multi-fight deal being made, where he comes in, gets a couple build-up fights, and then eventually we get to that, like three fights and the third fight in. But that's, maybe I'm just fantasizing that, because it just seems like such a natural big fight. But the most obvious to me is he goes to PBC.
Fantasizing and hope, two words that
we exactly
keep in the sport of boxing.
Well,
right?
So you're doing we're doing our fantasy matchmaking here, and sometimes that takes over, and you start thinking like that people are, but then you forget in the real world that actually doesn't happen. That there's the financial interests are not there, plus the egos. People are like, I am not going to be the B side in a fight, and that just derails everything.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, John, but you definitely appreciate your time, your first time here on The Last Round, hopefully not your last. So we obviously, I know we tried to schedule you a couple weeks ago and we couldn't coordinate the schedules, but we're glad that you were able to make some time for us tonight and jump on here. Before we finish up here, go ahead and let everybody know where they can find you, follow you, where they can keep up with your work.
Okay, well, thanks for having me on. This was great. I appreciate it. I feel bad for a lot of the listeners because I am not known as an in-depth boxing expert. I do financial stuff, so my knowledge of the ins and outs of the actual punching people in the face is more limited than other guys you could have on. But I appreciate being on. You can find me on Twitter at HeyNotTheFace. I write for a site called Bloody Elbow. We focus mostly on MMA and mixed martial arts. But I do a good percentage of boxing and stuff, focusing a lot of on the legal issues and court cases and stuff like that. And then on top of that, I have a podcast called the Hey Not the Face podcast, which again is mostly MMA, mixed martial arts, but we do cover a sizable amount of boxing on that too. And we'll have an episode coming up where we go over to boxing contracts and stuff and how they work.
Yeah, we definitely have to bring you on, when we have maybe some business stuff to talk about the sport and all that, because we've had episodes in the past, like we had an attorney. What was his name? Mike Kurt?
Boxing Esquire.
Kurt Emhoff. I love him. Good friend.
Yeah, he's a good guy. We've had him on to talk boxing contracts and some other stuff that was happening around that time. And a lot of people were interested in that one. That episode did really well. We also had digital producer Jay Chandry. Yeah. He's also busy on Twitter right there. He came on a couple weeks back and talked about like the business side of the sport. That was also a very popular episode. We got a lot of words about that. They interested in that. So if you're open to it, we'll bring you back, and especially we'll dive into the business side of the sport.
I would love to be on it anytime. Yeah. If I have in fact, people are interested. I did an episode of video once, article about the history of prize fights, money fights. And it goes through all how every generation, there's a different level of prize fighting and the money comes from other sources. So that type of stuff, we have a big money fight in the future. I'm there. I'm ready to talk about it.
Yeah. Well, you'll be the first call. We'll definitely reach out to you.
You'll be Mike, the first call after the three other people rejected. Yes, I got it.
You said it, not us. You said it, not us. But Mike, go ahead, before we completely sign off here, go ahead and let them know where they can find us and follow us.
Pardon me. We are at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. And be sure to join us next week. We'll be reviewing and previewing, obviously, the Katie Taylor, Chantel Cameron, Devin Haney, and Lomachenko.
Awesome. Awesome. So for our guest of the week in Bloody Elbows, John Nash, for my co-host, Michael Shepard, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.